to the Negro Leagues Are Major Leagues podcast, a production of Sports Reference. I'm your host, Curtis Harris, and today we're joined by Gary Ashwell. Gary is an author, researcher, and historian of baseball, primarily the Negro Leagues, minor leagues, and Cuban baseball. For today's show, though, we are particularly interested in his work in co-founding the Seamheads Negro Leagues database. So that database is excellent. It's the basis of baseball references, expanded Negro Leagues coverage. And Gary will tell us just how he got, you know, invested, started with discovering and researching Negro League baseball, but also the difficulty in trying to acquire, find, make sense of data and information pertaining to Negro League baseball during the the first half of the 20th century. Because as he will explain, that information wasn't always that well kept at the moment, and so it makes it tough for a historian to go in after the fact to try to piece together what took place. So it's a great conversation, I think. Hope y'all enjoy it. Here's Gary Ashwell. Welcome to the Negro Leagues, Our Major Leagues podcast. And today we're joined by Gary Ashwell. Gary, I'd like for you to introduce yourself because, I can explain who you are and what you do, but I always find it fascinating to hear people in their own words reflect on what they do and why they do it. So if you could, tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, I'm actually a freelance academic editor in real life. I was a journalist briefly, went to grad school for a long time and used to teach college and so on. But I've been doing research on baseball for, well, I've reached that point where I think it was roughly around 1999, 2000 when I started to get really seriously involved in it. So I've kind of reached that point where, I can say I've been doing this for 20 years now, and it kind of makes me sound kind of old. So, I've been doing, my focus has always been on the history of Black baseball and also Latin American baseball. And I've been seriously doing that since I found out that the library at the grad school where I was going had microfilm of the Chicago Defender and the Pittsburgh Courier and a lot of really famous Black newspapers. And I had remembered reading in many historians of Black baseball that I'd read at that point that those were the important papers. And just out of curiosity, I started looking into these microfilm reels and I sort of got drawn into it. So I became interested in the Negro Leagues because, well, it's I grew up as a baseball fan. I grew up in Kansas City, and of course, in Kansas City, even back in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't a ton of stuff about the Negro Leagues then. But you were aware that the Monarchs had existed. I mean, it was something that was mentioned, and I was a huge Royals fan, and partly because of that, I got kind of drawn into being kind of a stats nerd in the 80s. And I used to read Bill James, the Baseball Abstracts, and I'd buy the baseball encyclopedias and pore over them. And it was always really frustrating to me. I kind of, in the back of my mind, I knew that some other stuff was going on. Of course, I knew the story of Jackie Robinson and so on. And I read tons of baseball books and I kind of started to get the idea that there was something else going on aside from what I was reading in most of the books. And in the course of the 1980s, I started running across the work of people like John Holway and Dick Clark and some of the early historians who covered Black baseball in the modern era. And the key thing was probably that my mother gave me a copy of Only the Ball Was White by Robert Peterson, which is the first modern book about the history of Black baseball. And really the first book since Saul White had written his history in 1907. So it was the first book in 62 years that focused only on Black professional baseball.
You're not the first person to mention that book as a touchstone to get you started.
Yeah. And my mother gave me that sometime in the early 1980s. And I was I just couldn't believe that all this had happened and that hardly anybody knew about it. It was astonishing to me that you could get out the baseball encyclopedia and look at the careers of Babe Ruth and Honus Wagner and Walter Johnson and all of that. And there were these other players who were playing at the same time, who were just as good And where were they? They're not between the covers of the baseball encyclopedia. So it was always something just in the back of my mind, because I loved stats and advanced metrics such as they were in the 80s. And it, I always was really fascinated by the idea of what could you do with records of these players if you could put them together, you know? And of course, some folks started doing that. Dick Clark and John Hallway did some of the earliest statistical compilations that published them in Sabres Baseball Research Journal in the late 80s. Editions of the Baseball Encyclopedia started having stats for some of the major stars of Black baseball in the early 90s. So it started coming out, you know, but it was never like a complete, you know, the kind of stuff I was really looking for was something that would allow you to do analysis and figure out how teams were put together and how good players were compared to each other or compared to their white contemporaries. So it was really that point when I realized that it was possible for me to go and personally look in the microfilm and see box scores and started like collecting these things and like putting them together and like, you know, typing it in and creating spreadsheets and so on. That's really what got me started. Yeah. So.
And actually, that's a good point, actually, to kind of pause for a moment, because that's one of my one of the areas I wanted to talk about was just a process of just finding this information. So you've already mentioned some of the important Black newspapers like the Defender. Mm-hmm. But could you explain a little bit more about just how the statistics were kept historically? So, you know, how were the Negro League mm-hmm. stats kept versus how the white leagues had their statistics kept back in the 1930s, 1940s?
Yeah. Well, it was a very different situation. The Negro League statistics were generally compiled by the leagues, but they were generally not published because there were just many fewer venues, you know, for this sort of material than there were for white baseball, which had its sporting news, which published box scores for every game every week. You know, every major daily newspaper in the U.S. published box scores for every game in the major leagues. You had baseball magazines and so on that just covered all this stuff obsessively. You had annual guides that were published every year. Mm. In the case of Black baseball, it's just that the resources were just nowhere near at that level. First of all, until the 1930s, Black-run newspapers were entirely weekly. So they came out once a week. So basically you had, and they were not necessarily, couldn't always put out a very large edition. So you might have 24 pages, 36 pages total. And you might have like maybe two or three pages devoted to sports, and that's to all sports. So actually the Defender and the Courier and some other papers like the Baltimore Afro-American, Philadelphia Tribune, they did make an attempt to try to cover like all of the Black major leagues. Especially the Defender in the 20s, the Courier to some extent. And they really made an effort. They crammed in as many box scores as they could, as many stories about games and so on. But even, you know, it's like even cramming it as much as you could, you still get coverage of maybe half of the games that were played. Now, the earlier you go in the 1920s and before, actually, it was pretty common for daily mainstream newspapers to publish every box score for every baseball game they could find. Interestingly enough, it's the coverage that we get in terms of box scores is a lot better the farther back you go. So the 1920s, we've got box scores for 95%, in some cases 100% of games that were played, league games. So it's actually just by going through like the white daily newspapers, you can actually add to the extensive coverage you get in Black papers and end up with like a pretty complete picture, at least in terms of box scores and just, you know, basic accounts of games. You know, it's like, but the white papers, of course, didn't have a ton of other information. They just kind of stick a box score in there at the bottom of a column, you know, and they don't have they didn't have interviews with players, that kind of stuff. That's where you go to, you know, Black papers like the Defender and Courier to, you know, the columnists who wrote there. They have longer stories and so on. So that's where you get a lot of the information that helps to contextualize, you know, the box scores that you get. Now, as you go into the 30s and 40s, for a lot of reasons, all newspapers published fewer and fewer box scores. There are many reasons for that. Among other things, they published a lot more photographs. You know, so I'm guessing the printing technology improved in various ways. So there's just less room for the kind of, you know, tables of numbers and so on. So, so that's the coverage of the games. In terms of like statistics that were published that people would have known about, it was just not, there were a few instances of final season statistics. statistics being published a couple of times in the 1920s, you know, but there really wasn't, you know, there just wasn't a place to publish all of this stuff. So, and the leagues themselves had to depend a lot on the individual team owners to provide this information to them. And the team owners sometimes had other objectives aside from just helping the leagues out. Because a large part of their schedule consisted not of league games, but of other games that they played, barnstorming games, games against white semi-pro and amateur teams, exhibition games against white major leaguers, and so on. So there's outside the purview of the leagues. So they kind of had other, not quite the same agenda as the leagues themselves. So it wasn't necessarily that important. It wasn't the top item on the list of the team owners to get full and accurate statistics out all the time in the way that it might be for the white major leagues, which were much more top down and much more locked down in terms of how they controlled and disseminated information.
Yeah, this is sorry for listeners on the podcast, but I mention this very often in the interviews, how in my studies is my studies of basketball history have very similar issues with the difference in this era, the differences between the league games versus the exhibition or barnstorming games. And if your team is exclusively a barnstormer, then it's incredibly difficult to get specific game statistics. So. It's not a baseball specific problem. It's a broader sports problem in this era with the barnstorming nature of sports at that time. So something that's, I think, important here is that, you've described some of the historical issues in the settings of recording the statistics. Then comes the problem of, after the fact, of how that poses a problem for a researcher. Mm-hmm. Because if someone only records, let's say, just throwing out random numbers, they only record 50% of the data, and then 25% of that data just never gets recorded. Then another 25% might kind of be there, but you got to look really hard to find it. Yeah. So how do you go about trying to find the obvious info, but then also trying to tease out and get the information that's there, but less obvious, more difficult to ascertain?
I guess there are two issues there. Cause one is, actually just finding the box scores, which of course is, a task in and of itself, my method is always to start with the black papers. That's where you start. And that's how you outline your schedule and so on. Then you use that to go to the local papers. And you can trace a team from, the Monarchs might've started in Kansas City and then barnstormed their way across the Midwest to the East Coast, where they'd play some interleague games against, the Homestead Grays and the Black Yankees in New York City. But you know where they're going. So you look for, they might play a doubleheader in St. Louis on Sunday, and then on Monday they're in Indianapolis. On Tuesday they're in Columbus, Buffalo, then they're down in New York City. And you just have to piece all of this together. That just takes forever because there is not one centralized place to go for newspapers. We're very lucky these days because we have online digital archives. Yep. So that helps a ton. There are some things that are not archived yet that way, unfortunately. The Kansas City Call is a really important newspaper, and it has not been digitized, to my knowledge. That's a really important source for anything about the Monarchs and other aspects of the Negro Leagues. The St. Louis Argus is another important one that's partly digitized, but there's a lot of years for that aren't really available anywhere online. So the second part of it is, of course, when you get this information, it's, as you pointed out, it's not consistent, because you're talking about tons of different sources. Now we have what you might run across is something like, because you have box scores of all different kinds. Like you have box scores that are great, full, complete ones that have, fielding data. They have a complete summary section at the bottom that has everything. It has the sack hits and hit by pitch and everything. And sometimes you have box scores that don't have the summary section at all. It just has the table part at the top with the batters and at bats, runs and hits. And maybe you've got put outs and assists and errors, or maybe not. Most box scores in the 20s, 30s and 40s had fielding stats, though not all of them. I'd probably say 80 to 90% of them probably do. A good percentage, most of them in that era. I know one of the common things you'll hear about the Negro Leagues is sometimes people will claim that the box scores didn't have at bats, right? Well, That's true to some degree. It's mostly true before 1920. It's true for certain cities and certain newspapers, especially in the 1930s when coverage became a little spottier, in part because of the Depression and more teams were barnstorming and the leagues were on shakier ground. So there were more independent teams going around and it was just harder to get all of this reported in newspapers. So sometimes you just had box scores that would have runs, hits, errors, and maybe the fielding data, maybe a summary section at the end. But you can get a lot of the details that are missing from box scores from stories that accompany the box score. Sometimes you run across a story with no box score, but it'll have a lot of stuff in it about how the runs were scored. It's very frequent to find like an account of like all the runs scoring in a game, so you know who drove in the runs, who scored them, pretty much know the extra base hits or most of them anyway. You'll know if there's a home run, for example. One of the big things that's often missing is stolen bases. Now, they're not always missing, but Cool Papa Bell famously said, there was one time in the 30s, I stole 5 bases in a game, but they forgot to bring the scorebook, so nobody recorded what happened, And the thing is that's true. You can demonstrate that that's true of his career in the 1930s when he played for the Pittsburgh Crawfords. Just a lot of the box scores did not have stolen bases. They just weren't in the box scores. So
is there any specific reason, or is it just happenstance, or did people think stolen bases were that important in that era?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's just like they just do like the skeletal box score. It's like, we just want the runs scored and the hits and, whatever, a couple of other things. We don't care about anything else. Or they don't have room, it's like you've got the table section and you've got the summary section at the bottom. And I think to save space, they would sometimes just cut out the summary thing at the bottom. And that gives you like your extra base hits and stolen bases and stuff like that.
Yeah. Again, for my framework. Again, I'm a huge basketball person, so I don't know. Maybe I'm the right person in the wrong ways to host this podcast. But like I said, as I'm thinking about your description of these baseball box scores, I'm reflecting on the basketball box scores in that same era where they, if you get them in the first place, they might have field goals made, free throws made, and total points, but they won't tell you how many field goals were attempted.
Yeah,
you're more likely to get free throws attempted. And of course, they did not record rebounds or assists whatsoever prior to the 1950s. So, yeah, I know the feeling when you look for a box score and you're like, okay, this is literally the bare basics, the skeleton of what took place in this game. It's not giving you the full flavor of what happened.
Yeah, yeah. And with basketball, I can imagine. I mean, it's like, because it just does. I mean, a box score doesn't really capture a basketball game in the same way that a baseball box score does, or at least a full baseball box score does. So it's like, I can imagine like the way that could be frustrating.
Yeah. That was the sidebar, though. Again, I was just thinking like, oh, geez, like, baseball again has just so many more statistics and data associated with it. So it's more important in some ways to get it because the way players are judged historically is so dependent upon these statistical measures. As you work through the trouble of trying to just get the information and then contextualize it, obviously you've been doing this, as you said, for a couple of decades now, not to make you sound old, but you yourself said it, but for a couple of decades now, what inspired you then to, I guess, make the Seamheads project to actually start making this, really a central database for these statistics instead of having it all kind of scattered about?
Well, I mean, I have a blog called Agatype, and I collected a lot of these box scores. I did a lot of other research and just kind of figured out I figured out who some players were that people hadn't really fully identified. It's like you run across things like, oh, I haven't seen this before. Here's this guy. Here's a guy. Like, for example, there's a player named Juan Padron and another player named Luis Padron for years. People thought they were the same person. And one of the earliest things I did was figure out that they were actually two different people. I don't think I'm the only person who figured that out, but I was the first person to really write about it on online. But I did a lot of stuff like that on my blog. And as part of that, I was sort of posting, I noticed that, like, for example, that the 1916 season, all independent teams before the Negro Leagues existed, but a lot of the teams played each other, like, a lot, especially in the Midwest. Like, so the Chicago American Giants, Indianapolis ABCs, Cuban Stars just played each other a lot. And I thought, well, you could kind of put these together and add them up and kind of see what their stats were like. And it's kind of like a league, even though there's not a league there. So I take things like that and put it together, add it up, and just make a spreadsheet, and I just attach it to a blog post or, you know, post it there. And I was kind of doing that sort of randomly for a few years. And then a friend of mine, Kevin Johnson, who's I knew from various message boards, and he worked on the website seamheads.com, which was run by another friend of mine, Mike Lynch, who I also knew from was the same, you know, online places. And Kevin actually, because they do like a ballparks database, they do various things with that website. And Kevin was like, hey, why don't you like put your all your stuff together, and we'll just start a database here where everybody can like look at Black baseball stats, like all in the same place. And, you know, at first I was like, I don't know, maybe, you know, I'm writing my blog, I don't know. But eventually I was like, sure, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Why not? And I'd also put together a lot, because I do a lot of research on the Cuban League, where tons of North American Black players came to play during, especially during the winter season. And those games are very well recorded, actually, because they all took place, well, for the most part, most seasons, they all took place in Havana. So the Havana newspapers covered them very well. So in terms of box scores, and there are even seasons that have complete batter by batter accounts of every single game. It's amazing. You know, if this, like with the 1915-16 season, 1923-24 season, 1927-28 seasons, those are all like, you've got play-by-play accounts for all of them. And it includes a lot of players. Like Oscar Charleston came down there and played, Cyclone Joe Williams, John Henry Lloyd, Pete Hill, like tons of legends, Hall of Famers, you know, and you have this very precise statistical picture of what they did in Cuban baseball. And also there were white players from, you know, the U.S. Majors and minors who played too. So they kind of played on the same field against each other and sometimes on the same teams there. So I had a lot of this data. So we put it all together, you know, and Kevin and Dan Hirsch, you know, who works for Sports Reference now, he was doing the Baseball Gauge, which was also another, you know, sort of analytic site that was associated with Seamheads. And he helped us put it all together and kind of made a site for us and got it all presented there. And that was in around, like, we started in 2010. I do all this historical research, and that involves like figuring out exact dates, like when people are born and everything. But if I try to remember years of my own life, it's like, when was that? I was like, whatever.
Hey, similar problem. You know? You don't see it written down in stone. So,
yeah. You know, so we did that. And then I haven't told the full story of like how I got involved in Negro League stats. I won't go on, but part of it involved helping out an earlier project that was run by Larry Lester and Dick Clark and some others for the Hall of Fame. And it was kind of the thing that preceded the special election to the Hall of Fame for Negro Leaguers in 2006. So I'd helped with them, and I knew that they had a bunch of material too that they hadn't published, that they had continued to work on that. You know, they'd continued to do their own work for years after that study. So I contacted them and you know, said, well, maybe we can collaborate. And so they contributed a lot of material, and we worked together to develop it into the Seamheads database. And we just put it up there, and the idea was that it would be, it's a work in progress. You know, it still is to this day, but it's, you know, we just put up the years I had, which I think we started with like 1915 through 1922, and then a bunch of Cuban seasons. And then we just expanded, just worked it out, you know, and we actually finally got full coverage of all of the, you know, the Negro League seasons from 1920 to 1948. We finally achieved that in January 2020. So just in time for the 100th anniversary of the founding of the Negro National League by Rube Foster in 1920.
And so on that, this kind of brings me to the concluding question or discussion I want to have. Yeah, just, you know, coincidentally, you know, a century, as you said, a century after the, you know, the Negro Leagues get founded, you kind of, you know, it's not completed yet, but you do get like a, you know, a great measure of the stats all compiled. What is the, in your opinion, the historical significance of this information? Like, why should the normal average baseball fan, even the average person, not necessarily know all the data, of course, but just be aware of this information.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Like if you're a baseball fan, but you're in the habit of looking up stuff, and you look up Babe Ruth or like Ted Williams, when did he hit 400? Whatever. I think that it's really important that you can look it up and then see, like, maybe on the same page or at least on the same website, you can see information about people like Josh Gibson, who was playing at the same time as Ted Williams and was maybe as good a hitter as Ted Williams, maybe better, but who, until recently, you wouldn't see him in there with his statistical record, like in the same context or in the same place. You'd have to go someplace, especially to look for information on Josh Gibson. So I think that the fact that our data is coming to Baseball Reference is really important, because there it's being integrated with the MLB stats at the same time. Right now, they're different leagues. They played in different contexts. They played against different opponents, but at the same time, they were both playing, in the same years. They were, the Negro Leagues included some of the best ball players in the U.S. And I think it's important to have them all in a place where you can see that they were contemporaries, and that they were all playing the game, and that the black ball players were every bit the professionals, and in many cases the Hall of Famers that some of the white players were. So,
all right, yeah, and I will, as a historian myself, I'll add my own two cents on it. Just thinking about your work that you've done, also the people you work with as well. I mean, no one person is going to be able to get all this data. Like, this is just an immense amount of information. But the story you've been telling about just the difficulty in acquiring and finding and trying to make sense of the black baseball data from that era is very much reflective of just trying to piece together a lot of histories in the United States. Black people, poor people, Native Americans, lots of different people have histories that are hard to reconstruct because the info wasn't taken down at mm-hmm. that point in time. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to go back and really, mm-hmm. yeah, just rebuild and just make people aware of what took place. So I'll say I'm really appreciative of the work that you did and other people did at Team Heads did. And I mean, all the historians who work on this, because it's important that people realize that there's lots of information out there in history. Mm-hmm. We don't have it all, as weird as that might seem, that we don't know everything that happened in the past, but it's a lot of stuff that happened. as you're alluding to earlier, you have a hard time remembering like when you started working on some of this info. I understand the feeling as a fellow historian. I'm sometimes like, what did I do 2 weeks ago? I can't remember. So let alone try to research something that happened 75 years ago. I'd like to thank you, Gary, for joining us and explaining and just giving us good info and good just information to think about concerning black baseball and the importance of the information, the statistics to make sense of it.
All right. Thanks, Curtis. Yeah, it was great to talk to you. It was a lot of fun.
I'd like to once again thank Gary for joining us on the Negro Leagues, our Major Leagues podcast. And I just want to one more time emphasize just the importance of studying history, but also the difficulty of it, because historians and other folks who go back and look at the past have a very difficult time piecing together the history of people who don't have their story told in the moment. So say if it's 1940 and you're a poor person of any color, you're a black person, other racial minority. It is so hard because no one at that moment was really doing a lot to record your history, your story. And so years later, decades later, it's difficult for a historian to go back and, search and put back together what happened at that moment in time. So appreciate the hard work that people like Gary Ashwell do to and all the other folks we've been interviewing, the work that they do to make these stories available. Because it is some hard work. It's much, much easier to focus on the histories that were recorded kind of in broad daylight, very easy and accessible for everybody to get access to. It's these hard stories that are very worth telling that take a lot of difficulty in actually telling the story. So appreciate your local historian. They do great work. Anyways, see y'all back again next time here on Negro Leagues, our Major Leagues podcast.